Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuc. Justin Burke is a food writer, recipe developer, queer food activist, and award-winning pastry chef and baker. Burke's debut cookbook, Potluck Desserts, Joyful Recipes to Share with Pride, was released this past summer by Countryman Press. In the book, Burke offers simple, nostalgic recipes infused with personal stories from their life in both the world of baking and the queer community. On December 4th, Culinary Arts at SPAC presented an event featuring Justin Burke and recipes from Potluck Desserts prepared by some of the area's best bakers and pastry chefs. After the assembled audience had the opportunity to sample the confections, Justin and I sat down for a conversation. Congratulations on this evening and your beautiful, beautiful book.
Thank you.
Let's go back to 2003.
Oof.
I know.
Okay.
But it's how we get here, isn't it?
You
leave your hometown and discover your community. Share the story with the crowd, please.
So I grew up in Southern California, and as any good Southern California queer boy, I moved and worked at Disneyland.
What did you do there?
I started out in retail, so I worked in Toontown and Frontierland, but I really wanted to do entertainment. And so I auditioned, and they said, "You're great. You're going to work the Indiana Jones ride and be Indiana Jones and stand outside and be like, oh, sorry, the ride's broken. A bunch of snakes got out. I got to go wrangle them." But, I mean, it was fun, and I eventually did become an atmosphere character. Disney's probably going to sue me for saying this, but like...
I think you're allowed to say that you worked there.
I worked there, but I became an atmosphere character where I was goofy, specifically Christmas goofy. And so I just sat in a chair.
You have to be tall to be goofy.
You have to be tall.
Yes.
So a tall person can be Goofy, Queen of Hearts, or...
Blue,
or you could be Woody. I was Woody one time. But yeah, so I did that. That was 2003. Where I grew up was very conservative. If you've seen the movie Erin Brockovich with Julia Roberts, that is my hometown. Thank you. Usually people are like, ooh, great movie.
Like, do you remember the plot and what she was fighting for?
Right. Poisoned water that they knew about. So that's where I grew up, and I moved to Orange County, worked for Disney, and that's where I met Javier. It's how I open up the cookbook, as I talk about Javier. And Javier was maybe a year or two older than me, and he just knew I needed somebody. Like, I needed a buddy. I didn't know anyone, and it was very unique for anyone to move out of my hometown. So I was on my own, and Javier was out. He was very open that he was gay, and he just, like, never pressured me to, like, declare who I was. He just created a safe space for me. And he invited me one time to his Long Beach apartment where he was having like a gathering of friends, which was a queer potluck. It was my first queer potluck. And I went and literally my world changed because I met a kaleidoscope of people that I had never been exposed to, food I had never been exposed to, topics, conversations, different religions, different gender identity, like just this like crash course in 3.5 hours of like learning what humanity is in reality. And I walked away and I was like, what just happened? And no one questioned why I was there. No one said like, how do you identify? They're like, you're just Justin from Barstow. How sad. And and they became like my chosen family for those 4 months of living in Long Beach and in Orange County. And I still think about them because they introduced me to possibility. They accepted me and planted these seeds of self-acceptance and what it means to foster and steward relationships and what community means, but also it was all centered around food. And it taught me the power of food and what it can do more than just nourish us. It's storytelling. It's times of joy, grief. It's always there. So that was 2003. Big moment.
Big moment. You met your community and started to learn about the place that food holds in queer culture. Could you talk more about what it means and what you've learned over the years that it means?
Yeah. So in 2003, when that happened, the term queer food wasn't mentioned. It wasn't in media. No one was talking about it. And obviously, like, queer history was not documented. Like, I knew nothing. Like, my ignorance it showed. Like, I knew nothing about my own community. Then I went on my career. I almost became a UN peace builder after many, many years of schooling. Never went to culinary school. I'm self-taught. And then when I changed my career to food, that's when I like threw myself back into, because I was living in Boston. I lived in Boston for 16 years. And I like threw myself back into this environment of homophobia, transphobia, abuse, misogyny, sexism. Like,
in the restaurant business.
In the restaurant business. It was just like, I elected to be in this environment. But I was stubborn and I was like, no, I'm here to prove a point. Like, I belong, we belong here. We belong in front and center. We have a story to tell. And then that's when I started reading more food writing. And that's when I met John Birdsall, who was an incredible food writer, incredible queer food writer, has been really leading the charge of talking about what queer food is. And really to me, what it is the documentation of our history. Like, what we've done as a community, specifically in gatherings like queer potlucks or any kind of gathering moments, we have fostered and safeguarded our history with the food. Every time we make something, it's usually talking about, this was, like in my cookbook, I talk about Peter's husband, who introduced me to what it was like living in the Lavender Scare, what it was like to actually be at Stonewall when the riots happened. Kind of gave me behind the scenes of what it was like in the AIDS clinics, because all I knew about that was I was a child and I knew that this was bad. And I was being told that the people it was affecting were bad. And I was like, but I think I'm one of those people. But I didn't have the context to understand what that meant. So this food is like teaching younger generations the legacies of the generations before us. And we're honoring the people that have made significant impact on our community. Like, we'll rename a dish after like a drag queen who made an amazing, like, I don't know, did something amazing. They always do something amazing, but like.
Which amazing thing gets a thing named after
you? But you know what I mean? Like, we've kept it. And now there's people like John Birdsall, and there's like so many other amazing queer food writers and chefs and cookbook authors who are finally saying like, enough's enough. We're going to talk about it. I'm sorry if it makes you uncomfortable, but we're here. And we're going to share our history because it actually wasn't erased. We've been just holding it. And now it's time for us to expose it. So, yeah.
So you just said that you opted to go into the toxic world of culinary. Mm-hmm. How was that decision made? When did you begin teaching yourself to bake and create these incredible treats?
I was finishing up my two master's degrees from Brandeis University, and I was working towards becoming a peace builder for the UN or like maybe work for the EU. And I was dabbling in like getting a PhD because I wanted to be a diplomat. I carry the weight of the world on my shoulders. I just want to fix things. Not fix people, but help people.
If you can, we're in support. Go for it.
But what I learned quickly is I do not have the ability to disconnect the emotion of seeing pain and suffering and not being able to fix it. Or you think you provided a solution to a problem, but it just created a bigger problem. And it just didn't work for me. So this was about the same time.
Was that a difficult thing to discover and face?
Yeah, because I felt like I wasted a lot of money on education at that time. I was like, what am I going to do with a master's in sustainable international development and a master's in peace and conflict resolution? Like, what does one do with this?
Trifles.
Trifles and write a book. but at the same time, my then husband, we were starting a family, and we chose to do surrogacy, and we were living in a brownstone in the South and in Boston, both working nonprofit jobs, and it is very expensive to do surrogacy. And he jokingly was like, you should start an online bake sale and bake stuff because you're so good at it, and then that's just raising money for us to have, it's like extra cash. And this is way before anyone was doing online food anything selling. Like, I literally got Square and was like, make a website and here's what I'm doing. And we called it the Baby Fun Bake Sale. And one of my friends went on Top Chef around that same time, Stephanie Smar. So Christine Kish's best friend, Stephanie Smar, she went on, she did really well the New Orleans season. She left her job and started doing pop-ups, donut pop-ups. This was 2013, 2014. And she was like, hey, I have this platform. Let me help you earn some extra cash. I love the gourmet Pop-Tarts that you make. Make a couple of those, join my pop-up, and we'll just like see what happens. So one random wintry Saturday, we made about 300 to 400 items total, and we sold out of everything in 31 minutes. And this person, we didn't know who they were. They're like, this was fantastic. When's the next one? And Stephanie and I did not talk about doing this again. And we both just like looked at each other and were like, see you next Saturday. And we ended up doing that for an entire year and went on a national tour. So we like created this like weird cult following with pop-ups in Boston. And then the Boston Globe one day wrote a feature on me and called me a pastry chef. And I was like, oh crap, I'm a pastry chef. And that didn't go over well with the culinary community in Boston because I was very, very, very green, self-taught. My mistakes were public. And I had to learn how to be okay with that. I had to learn the really quickly public opinion, judgment, how to not really worry about it. But what was beautiful is that they came alongside me and have been part of this journey of me growing and like cheering me on. And we had a son, and now we co-parent beautifully, and we both remarried. So Jasper has four dads, and he's very proud of that. It's really funny because he's like, hi, I'm Jasper Woods and I have four dads. And people are like, what do we have here? Like, Polly. And I was just like, whatever you want to think it is.
It works for us.
But it comes down to wanting Jasper.
I've never heard of anyone attaining their child that way. So great job. And I don't mean, of course, through surrogacy. I mean through bake sale.
I baked a lot of Pop-Tarts for that child.
So when does the journey of potluck desserts, joyful recipes to share with pride begin? How did you start to accumulate the recipes, write the personal essays, find a publisher, etc.?
I think anytime you become a professional chef and you have a following or people love what you do, it's almost like one day someone is going to say, you should write a cookbook. So when we moved to Charlotte, so we moved from Boston to Charlotte in 2014, 2015. And I was like, I'm done with the pop-ups. I'm done with baking. I'll just like, let's have a child. So we were going to live where it was more affordable and have a kid. And then, surprise, these people opened up a restaurant that became like super popular, Bon Appetit's Best New Restaurant and a James Beard nominee 4 times in a row. And I worked for them and built their like little group. And I learned every aspect of the business. They gave me an amazing opportunity to learn front of house, back of house, marketing, finance, everything, like crash course for 4 years. And I just was very fortunate. This was about the time in 2018 was when Jasper was born. I wrote a piece for the first time. I did something for Eater. And it was called Homophobia Almost Made Me Quit Being a Chef. I thought I was just doing this like fun practice of like, oh, I'm writing this like first person perspective of the discrimination in the industry from a first person perspective, which was the first time it ever happened because typically it had been investigated on. I thought nothing of it. My editor was amazing, Hillary. We published it in July of 2018. And like becoming a pastry chef, it was like, you're a food writer now.
And you're a viral food writer. Buckle
yeah,
up, baby.
It went viral before it viral was a thing. Like my DMs flooded with all of these queer and trans chefs and restaurateurs. How did you get out of it? Do you have any resources? Where can I go work? Who do you know where it's safe to work? Can I come work for you? And I'm like, I don't know. And I was like, I have a platform. It was the first moment where I was like, I have a responsibility now. Like, sure, I don't have hundreds of thousands of followers, but I have a group of people who look up to me. And that is a huge responsibility. And that is when I started to see my 2 degrees come into play. I was like, okay, it's like coming together. And I was like, you know what? I entered this industry in a very unique way. I'm gonna keep carving out my path in the culinary scene in a very unique way. And I'm gonna make it work for me. And so I started exploring writing a cookbook. And the publisher, at first I was like, I don't need an agent. And so I just went to publishers and I was like, this is the book I wanna write. I want it to be queer focused. I wanna talk about food, but like queer food, like from a queer lens. Like, I don't wanna code it. I don't want to dumb it down to make it more palatable for people who are not in the community. I don't wanna be like politically sensitive. I don't wanna be a caricature. I don't wanna be campy. I wanna show real lived in queer and trans lives, what it looks like to be us every day. Thanks. And the publishers were like, can you just write a book about pie? And I'm like, how many more books of pie do we need? Like, nothing against that, but like, there's more story to tell in food. They're like, well, can you do the desserts that you were doing in your restaurants? And I'm like, well, no, because then nobody's gonna bake them because they're gonna be too intimidated. Like, I want to start with home bakers, nervous bakers. Like, I want to build confidence and pride in what they're doing. And so it was a bunch of no's, and it took 10 years to get a cookbook deal. So Sally Eckes comes along, and she becomes my, if you don't know Sally Eckes, she is an amazing cookbook agent. She's a huge advocate for the voices we don't hear. And so she randomly asked me how my journey was going. I said it was going horribly and I give up. Yeah, I can only take so many no's. And she was like, well, if you were to write a cookbook, what would you write about? And I was like, it would be called Potluck Desserts, and it would talk about queer potlucks, and it would be potluck desserts because it's two stories where we're out on our own as like baby gays, like navigating the world and finding our chosen family, but we're also cooking the recipes from our blood families, whether they're for us or against us. And it's two beginning points. Everyone starts cooking for the first time, baking, and it's usually family recipes. And every queer person has been in that moment of like, where do I go and who do I know? So it's two stories that intersect. And she was like, interesting, okay. And then 2 weeks later, she was like, hey, will you allow me to pitch this to Countryman Press? And I was like, I don't have a proposal. She's like, we'll worry about that in a minute. And then like a week later, she's like, you have a cookbook deal. And I was like, what the hell? And Countryman came in and they were like, we believe in this book. They asked for some, like, a proposal. I wrote it to do, like, the business thing. And they gave me full autonomy to design it the way I want it designed, to write it, to tell the stories I wanted to tell for my queer. See, I still get emotional talking about it. Like, this
it's
is
allowed.
Insane.
It's allowed. Emotions are allowed, yes? Okay.
They just let me do it, and I did it. And I'm really proud of it.
And you should be.
Thank you.
And it's beautiful.
Took me 3 years to write, though.
I bet.
I answered your question, finally.
No, it's great. No, you got you. The whole thing was the answer. How did you land on the recipes? There's a lot of them. How did you land on the categories and the recipes?
So everyone thinks like a book of potluck desserts would be easy. It's not easy. Because I threw out a number to Countryman. I was like, 75 recipes. Because I write recipes, but they're one-offs. Like a publisher, like Southern Living is like, we need this recipe. I'm like, okay, I'll write it, do a head note, done, on to the next thing. This is really difficult to create a full body of work of multiple recipes because they have to tell a story as well. Whether you have a narrative into it, they have to tell a story. It's like menu writing. So I learned that those two skills that I have worked with this. But it was hard. At one point, I had 155 recipes. But then I started to realize a lot of the recipes were the same. They were just called different things depending on what part of the country you were from. Mm-hmm. Like the layered pudding dish, like some people call it a yum yum.
I'm so glad this is the page
what, really?
That my finger is on.
And we didn't talk about
we
this.
Didn't. I wanted to talk about yum yums and delights.
So some people call them delights. Some people call them yum yums. Some people call them lush. Some people, which I don't agree with, lasagna. But I'm just like, that's a stretch, folks. But I was like, okay, pare it down. Show the similarities of these desserts. And so I scaled back to 75. I also learned a lot about my palate, more than I knew. I favor coconut and citrus. Don't like chocolate. And so I had to like scale out the tropical palate notes, bring in more chocolate. Do I have enough fruit? Do I have enough like vanilla, butter? Am I getting too chef-y? Am I like getting too comfortable and making something too out there that doesn't fall in line with potluck desserts? Mm-hmm. It was challenging. My husband was really glad when it was over. And he has requested that book two is on vegetables, but yeah, it was...
Well, first you need the Boston Globe to declare you a vegetable chef.
Yeah, we'll work on that one. Yeah.
I mean, if anybody can, I think it's you.
But yeah, I was very thoughtful. I also wanted people, yes, it's written for the queer, trans, and allied community, first and foremost, but it is open to anyone, whether they are supportive or they're wanting to learn. But also, with the recipes, I wanted people to feel comfort, like see themselves, like a dish, or like, I'm from the Midwest and I see that, like strawberry pretzel salad, or sure, it's not a chocolate Texas sheet cake, it's a caramelized white chocolate one, but I wanted them to be seen, anyone in the country to be seen.
Do you have a favorite category, personally, to eat?
Like the chapters?
Yes.
So if you haven't seen the book yet, I did not break up the chapters by like, chapter one, cakes, chapter two, cookies. I was like, okay, how do we actually approach cooking or baking for a potluck? We usually are like worried that we have to transport this somewhere. And so like we think of what we're gonna make by how we're gonna get it there. So I broke the chapters up by rectangular square pans, sheet trays, sheet pans, loaf pans, casserole dishes, and then bunts, bowls, and other round things. That's the last chapter. And that's been like what people have loved the most. They're like, it is the most practical way to like thumb through a cookbook. And I was like, I was just trying to help you get it from point A to point B.
You share personal stories in the book, stories of people you've met, stories of people you know. Mm-hmm. They're associated with recipes or at the head of a chapter.
Yeah.
How did you figure out, feel out what personal stories you wanted to share and what people you wanted to talk about?
I knew that I wanted to open the book up with Javier. I haven't seen Javier since that time. Part of me hopes that Javier reads this book and is like, I know that, Justin, and we reconnect, because this is before social media. Like when I left, that was the end of our relationship. So I knew that was very important because that was the anchor. When it came to writing the stories, I didn't approach this thinking it was going to be so heavy on storytelling, but I also didn't know what kind of food writer I was yet. I didn't know how to talk about queer food because it isn't a tangible thing. Like it's not an ingredient, it's not a specific skill. Like it's the atmosphere, it's the people around, like this is queer food, like the people around the table, the sharing. And so I just kind of went through memory lane, which was probably dangerous. Because a lot of things that I thought I unpacked, I actually didn't. And like, I mean, I'm very proud to say, like, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. Like I had to be medicated. Like my depression became so bad because I finally for once was allowing myself to work through this baggage. And the trauma, and also a lot of realization that I came out but didn't come out. Like it was kind of forced upon. And I just stopped. I was like, I'm gay. Because of people's reactions, I was like, I can't go any further. But writing this book and writing these stories and for who I was writing it for, I realized, I was like, I don't identify as gay, I'm queer. And then I was like, and both of my brothers, like my youngest brother is trans and my middle brother is queer as well. Like my mom, I'm like, Mom, you are mother. like, because we have different dads. Like, you're the common denominator. And she's like, what? And I'm like, mm-hmm. And I'm much older than them. Like, my youngest brother and I are the same age apart as my mother and I. Like, she was 17 when she had me. And so it was a responsibility to protect them. And that's when I realized, and I was like, I'm non-binary. Like, when I started hearing the terms and the words and being educated on it, I realized like a lot of my challenges as a child was because I was forced to be a man. But I never gravitated towards femininity. I was just always in the middle. Like, I was just always just Justin. And this book forced me to meet myself for the first time.
Justin Burke is the author of Potluck Desserts, Joyful Recipes to Share with Pride. The book is published by Countryman Press. I spoke with them at a Culinary Arts at SPAC event in Saratoga Springs on December 4th. Culinary Arts at SPAC programs are produced by Pam Abrams and Kevin London with support from the Market Bar and Cafe and Franklin Square Market. To learn about upcoming SPAC events, visit SPAC.org. For a list of future WAMC On the Road events, visit WAMC.org. Once again, the name of the book is Potluck Desserts, Joyful Recipes to Share with Pride, and the author and chef is Justin Burke. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable.